This is Current Sports from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
From WKAR at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports with Al Martin.
Johnny Peralta lines one to right field for a base hit.
Miguel Cabrera, game-winning walk-off home run.
The champagne is flowing in the Tigers clubhouse.
I would have never, ever thought that I would have been in the Michigan Hall of Fame as a kid when I first picked up a basketball on 512 Gray Street in Flint, Michigan.
Thomas drives from the left side, goes up and banks it in. Jasmine Thomas.
Just the joy you get from watching like a JV wrestler getting his first match ever. That makes it worthwhile as a coach.
It's a fake. Bates is going to throw. Goal. Touchdown. Michigan State wins it in overtime.
What's up, good people? Welcome once again to the premier week of Current Sports with me, Al Martin. It is May 15th. Good afternoon. I hope you all are having a productive day, and I'm glad you all are tuned in to kick off today's show. We'll talk about the decision concerning the nation's top basketball recruit. We will talk about the Tigers rolling over the Astros. Also, shocking new developments to the Titus Young fiasco, NBA playoffs, and so much more. Not to mention part two of our television and sports series. Today, we'll talk with the Spartan basketball legend, folks. He will tell us about his incredible career and his entrance into the world of sports broadcasting. That's all coming up on Current Sports. Keep it locked right here. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Welcome to Episode 3. Boy, we are certainly rolling now, ladies and gents. I want to remind you all out there that you can join the hands-on discussion here at Current Sports, not by just listening to us on the radio, but by following me on Twitter at Al Martin, WKAR. Like us on Facebook.com/Current Sports, or even email me. That's right, email me. Shoot me an email, guys. AlMartin@WKAR.org. Now, during our call-up portion of the show, you can even tweet me or Facebook us a question. All right, let's dig into the show. We kick off part two of our three-part series, that's right, about sports and television, talking with three men who have definitely made their mark in the TV sports world. Now, yesterday you heard my sit-down with Jeff Gintner, the general manager of Fox Sports South, and his thoughts on the new innovations that television is headed towards when it comes to the production side of things. Well, today we have another treat for you guys, another very special guest. Steve Smith, a Spartan basketball great who finished his career at MSU at the top of the all-time leading scorer list, 2,263 points. He ranks fourth on the school's all-time assist list and fifth in rebounds. He was named a first-team All-American as both a junior and senior, led the Spartans to a Big Ten championship, Sweet 16 appearance. He was also inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame in 2001 and just recently the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. Now, the man played 14 seasons in the NBA and even won a championship with the Spurs back in 2003. The Spurs are also in the playoffs right now. We'll talk about that. Steve is also widely known for his great charity work over the years, but he has now taken his talents into the world of sports television broadcasting. Steve, welcome to the show, brother.
I appreciate it. How are you doing? And congratulations on your new endeavor, and looking forward to listening to you over the years, and hopefully you have the same type of career that can last as long as you want it to last.
Hey, Steve, we really appreciate you coming on the show, man. I really appreciate that. I always tell people, man, I'm feeling some big shoes in Earl Robinson, man. He's been here for so long, man. I'm just trying to do what I do, you know?
Yeah, you for sure. I mean, Earl did it fantastic, but, you know, everybody says you're the guy to fill the shoes, so embrace it, run with it, and you got all of our support.
Thanks so much, Steve. All right, now, Steve, with that introduction I just gave you, I mean, all of those accolades over the years, I mean, when you sit back and just think about all of that, what goes through your head?
Well, I think the first thing, Al, is first, blessed. You know, and I got to give a lot of credit to my foundation.
Right.
You know, that starts off with my parents, my siblings, and also the neighborhood I grew up in. And then it furthers on to coaches and everybody who played a part, you know, family members, all the way up into Michigan State University, what the university provided, that community. And obviously a special shout out to Judd Heathcote and Tom Izzo, the head coach and yeah. assistant coach who molded my basketball career. But I think more importantly, you know, the basketball career has been phenomenal, a dream come true. But the person, the man, the father, you know, the husband I've become, you know, I give a lot of credit to just the type of people that I was around and learned from.
Yeah, very, very, very true. Now, I mean, Steve, now when you look at your career at MSU, not just things on the basketball court, like you just hit it on, but how did your time at MSU prepare you just for life? What are some of the most valuable lessons you learned here at MSU that you can now carry, you know, through your life off the court?
Well, the one thing about Michigan State University is the community that supports everybody. And that's the way, obviously, as I got older, you know, try to mock some of the things Michigan State did. I think it just shows you just this past season where, you know, Michigan State basketball, just take that part of the sports community, you know, had alumni game. I don't know if there's many universities can get 152 guys back or 142 guys back to play. I think it was 152 guys who came back, but 140 something played in the game. I mean, just phenomenal how many people came back to be a part of it. And that's all because of what they've built over the years and all the coaches, and obviously capped off by what Tom Izzo has done. Yes, on the court, we understand he's been one of the best ever in college basketball. But I think off the court, people will remember Tom Izzo long when he's gone about the things and the lives he has touched and impressed, of him being Tom Izzo the man.
Yeah, without a doubt, Steve. And you talk about that alumni game. I mean, I was there and got to see all you guys come back. It really is something special, you know, to see all the players that came back and showed their appreciation, you know, for this program. I think that's a testament to the incredible program, basketball program, just in general of MSU, man. So now you just hit on the coach Judd Heathcote. Now I hear that he was a pretty fiery guy. You got any Judd Heathcote stories, man?
Oh, well, everybody who's been around there know he was definitely fiery. The stories can go on, but, you know, the antics, the way he coached was no nonsense. The way he conducted practices, conducted himself on the floor was basically how he conducted himself off. Mm-hmm. Funny, one of the funniest coaches out there, but also when it was time to work, it was basically like the state of Michigan, blue-collar attitude. You pull up your boots, you strap on, you get a chance to go out there, and you fear no man, and you go out there and you try to outwork them. And I think that's what Judd Heathcote did. And then you come down to the X's and O's, one of the best of getting his teams and individuals that he coached to reach their potential. And whatever that potential may be, I think he did that for me. I think also he did that for our teams. We basically reached our potential, and that's all you can ask for.
Without a doubt, man. Now, you know, Tom Izzo was an assistant on that team. You know, of course, he took over for Jill when he left. Now, when you looked at Tom Izzo as an assistant on that team, did you ever think that he would turn out to be such a legendary coach that he is right now?
Well, I always knew he would be a great coach. You know, the success he has, you know, you just look and say, is it possible? Yeah, it was possible because of the type of coach he was, the type of commitment he put into being an assistant coach. The work ethic was there. Then you got a chance to see him mold himself from everything and all the coaches that was around him, and obviously Judd being a big part, taking a lot of what Judd did and then adding his spin on it. You know, it was a recipe for success. And then you got to give a lot of credit for some of the guys who, you know, Tom Izzo got a chance to recruit. You got a chance. Right. You have to be able to recruit your type of guy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, is that your type of player? No, it's your type of guy that can really take your mission or your vision and transport it to the court, and you know, with the same type of vision. And I think there are some players that he did, that he's had in his program that have done that.
Without a doubt. Now, Steve, your career after basketball, I mean, now you're into sports broadcasting, man. What made you want to enter sports broadcasting?
You know, it was something that I kind of thought about when I retired. I was nudged on by some Turner executives where they got a chance to saw me at dinner, and they said, what are you doing next? And I said, I'm not sure yet. There's options I have on the table. But I end up talking to them and went out and made a tape. And next thing you know, got the job as Atlanta Hawks.
Right.
Analyst for their teams, and then that led to auditioning for NBA TV and Turner, and now today getting a chance to do some of the most exciting sporting events. You know, I'm covering the finals. I'm covering March Madness. I cover Big Ten. So another dream job for me, and I'm enjoying doing it.
Without a doubt, Steve. Now, you said you made a tape. I mean, you had no material up until that point. I mean, how did you put together that tape?
I went out there, and they showed us a game that already been played, and we basically reenacted like if I was a broadcaster. They took the tape and obviously said that there's some things that needed to work on. But overall, it was pretty good. And if it's something I wanted to do, the job was mine. So I ran with it.
Nice, nice. Now, when you started off during your rookie days of that of this this TV sports broadcasting thing, what for you was the biggest challenge?
Well, I think for me is separating myself from being a player, you know, and getting to that mode as an analyst. And then after that, just getting comfortable behind the camera. There's so much that goes on, as you know, the production of it, and before you get a chance to go on air and while you're on air. And then other than that, you know, it was kind of an easy transition because I was talking about something that I've loved dearly that has been around since I was 4 or 5 years old. You're basically giving your opinion and your honesty about the game of basketball. And I always say it from day one, I'm not going to try to be a personality. I'm going to try to be Steve Smith and give my honest opinion.
That's all you can do, man. Now, there's another aspect to this thing because I've talked to people, you know, when I'm just now coming out of college. And when you look at sports broadcasting, you see a lot of athletes like yourself in the industry, you know, either reporting, being play-by-play, analysts, you know, things of that nature. Now, how do you respond to people who criticize athletes that get broadcasting jobs and feel as though they aren't qualified and only get the job because they are a former athlete? Have you heard of any of that backlash?
Oh, for sure. And I you definitely listen and you can understand. Mm-hmm. But I think it comes down to, you know, it's hard to have a player, a person that didn't play, being able to supersede a person that was in it, lived it, and if everything's on the table is all even.
Right.
You're probably going to go with the former player if you're talking about an analyst role. I mean, other roles I can see, the play-by-play. But if you talk about the analyst role on the broadcast, it's going hard to be able to outshine a player. But it's been done. I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to Doris Burke.
Right.
Yes, she played basketball, but she's commentating on male basketball, and she's a female. So I think there is a chance, but I think it will be an analyst role. The role I have now, it will be probably looked upon as given to former players versus somebody else.
So you do think former players, I guess you guys, when you look at it, yeah, you guys have been there, been out there, you know, and playing. You guys understand the game so much that you're average fan because you guys have a hands-on experience with that. Now, have you received any of that firsthand? Have you heard that? I mean, like, people come up to you and say, hey, Steve, man, I mean, you're an athlete. I mean, what's up with that, man, you know?
Oh, well, you have. I mean, but I think, you know, the part I pride myself on is I'm able to articulate the same way, but I think also giving a little bit of extra knowledge because I can reminisce on a game that I participated or a championship I was involved or a player that was a teammate. But it doesn't, you know, you don't have to be an athlete. It helps. But I think if you look now, it's changing. We have all walks of life, females who are hosting NFL. And, you know, as of right now, we've never had a female that played in the NFL, but females are hosting the show and being able to talk about some men's sports that they've never got a chance to play in. So I think there's no limitation right now that anybody can do anything right now, and opportunities are given.
Without a doubt, man. Now, you, a guy who, you know, you're in the industry doing this thing, man, and doing a great job, by the way. Where do you see the future of sports and television going?
Well, I think the technology part, social media, is playing a lot into – you know, broadcasting. I mean, we're using it right now because everybody wants the information right now. Take for instance, Iman Shumpert at the Knicks last night, whether he's going to play or not. Mm-hmm. Somebody got a chance to see him warm up, and the first thing they do is take a picture, put it on social media, and now we have to say, is he going to play or not? But you want to have some reliable sources, but I think it's going to come down to instant information, you know, even more and more, and also being able to have looks into practices and people being able to watch huddles through social media and going through what they're going through. Some of the things that was behind the scenes, I think, are going to be more in the forefront now because of social media and where the world is going. For our sponsorship, too, you pay a lot if you can get that access.
Right, without a doubt, man. Now, something that you were involved with, along with a lot of MSU alum, I mean, the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic, really a great event. You actually came back and sat on the panel and really were a part of, you know, MSU kids who are interested in sports broadcasting and kind of mentoring them and giving them advice. For those of them, for those who didn't get a chance to attend that event, what advice would you give to young kids who want to get in this career?
Well, I think, first of all, I think the message we kind of gave out is that you got to work hard, first of all. Second was networking, getting a chance to understand your craft, know everything about your craft, and separating yourself, because it's just like want to be a professional athlete. The numbers are probably even more of people want to be in sports business or be in sports journalism.
Yeah.
And I think everybody on that panel, and let's give Pam Whitten a lot of credit, an unbelievable event that her and her staff and team put on.
Without a doubt,
first
yep.
class.
Yeah.
I think people, everybody on the panel, everybody there, I think everybody involved, it was something that everybody loved. And I think the information was unbelievable. We got a chance to do so many different type of setups to get a chance to give knowledge and interaction. It wasn't just a panel. I mean, you had one-on-one interaction. We had so many different things that we did. I think all the students and all the people on the panel, I know for myself I can speak. I learned so much, and I was happy to be around like-minded people talking about an industry that we love.
Without a doubt. Now, Steve, if I talk to anybody who knows you or comes in contact with you, they always say Steve is such a nice person. Pam actually said at the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic, and you are such a genuinely just good guy, man. I know you do a lot of charity work. I mean, talk about the importance of giving back, and what initiatives do you have in the works right now as far as your charity work is concerned?
Well, first of all, you know, dear to my heart is the Claire Bell Student Academic Center. Obviously, the building is up, but it's doing so much for, you know, student athletes who are there now and also who have attended Michigan State University and got a chance to use of the building. Second is the C. Smith Scholarship, where I provide scholarship from kids to go from my high school to Michigan State University and try to just lessen the burden of them financially. And then there's so many other things I'm trying to do. There's a Children's Hospital board, a few Spalding down here, I'm on their board. A friend of mine, the Sorrel, his foundation, where they provide scholarships to foster kids, and the list goes on, but it's not so much about the names, it's about what you feel and the time you give and how much do you want to help people, and that's the type of people I want to be around. It doesn't have to be financial. I think time means more than financial in the world we're living in right now, but I want to be around those type of people that want to give back no matter what.
Right, without a doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, just to remind you all, we are talking to Steve Smith, former Spartan basketball great, who finished his career at MSU as the all-time leading scorer. Such a good guy now in the world of broadcasting for Turner Sports. And, you know, Steve, now, you actually won a championship with the Spurs back in 2003. Now, these guys are still kicking. You see what they did last night. They beat the Warriors to take the series lead. I mean, how good do you think this team can be, man? They got the series lead over a young, youthful, good team with Steph Curry. I mean, where do you see them going so far in the playoffs right now?
Well, I would think, like you said, these players I play with, so you can tell they're up in age.
Right.
Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. But if you look at that big three along with Greg Popovich, the foundation, the culture, you build something special, it can last a long time because everybody just falls in line, and that's what the Spurs organization, ownership on down to players have done, and especially the leadership of, you know, some of the stars, David Robinson and Tony and Tim and, Manu Ginobili. But it's a culture that they built, and it's about excellence, and it's about always being in the moment, always preparing yourself. Pop does an excellent job of preparing for the finals in first day of practice. It's not about winning game one. It's about being able to win the entire championship, the entire trophy for the NBA. And so his preparation is just something that you want to be around, whether it's basketball, sports, or a business model. And you can just plug people in, and that's what he's done. And obviously you have to have talent, but in the NBA, everybody has talent.
Yeah,
they get it done. One, they communicate well. Two, they have some talent. But I think just the system and the culture that they built is a winning basketball culture, and that's the one thing you want to do. And they have a chance, even though up of age, give Golden State Warriors a lot of credit. Mark Jackson is building that culture. We're seeing it from these first 2 years of his coaching career. They have a chance to beat the Spurs, but I don't think anybody would be surprised if the Spurs went on to beat Golden State and went to the championship. They had that type of pedigree. It's just going to come down to if those old legs can keep kicking.
Without a doubt, man. They shock me every time I see them out there, man. So I got to ask you, who do you have winning the entire thing?
Well, at the beginning of the season, you know, they make us give our predictions, and I went definitely with the Miami Heat, and I still feel that way. You know, you wish Chicago was in full strength. That's the one thing you wish about sports, that we didn't have to have injuries, that everybody could be at full strength. Across the board, I would love to see, I predicted OKC versus Miami Heat
right, with
Russell Westbrook, but obviously he's not playing, and that's a part of sports. But I think right now, if I had to predict again, it would be the Miami Heat, but I think some kind of way, I just got a feeling about the Memphis Grizzlies. I think they might get there.
Without a doubt, man. I want to echo those sentiments also. I have the Miami Heat, but Memphis, boy, do they look good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Steve Smith, truly a Spartan legend here in Spartan basketball. Now with Turner Sports Broadcaster. Steve, I want to send out a truly heartfelt thank you for coming on the show, man.
No problem. I appreciate it. Glad to be on. And anytime you need me, don't hesitate to call.
Without a doubt. Steve Smith, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Well, when we return to Current Sports, we will dive into our Current Sports section of Current Sports. There's a lot of Current Sports right here on WKAR. And I want to remind you all that we'll be taking your calls at 140. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Again, the number is 517-355-9527. Hey, even tweet me a question. Facebook us a question. We want to hear your thoughts on all of today's topics. That's at 140, people. Stay tuned. More Current Sports is next.
The IRS and the Justice Department come under fire for harassment of the Tea Party and the press, respectively. Hillary Clinton takes more heat on Benghazi. And in Massachusetts, Republican Gabriel Gomez gains on Democrat Ed Markey. I'm Neil Conan, political junkie Ken Rudin, plus former DNC chair Howard Dean on the future of the Democratic Party. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
Every weekday afternoon at 4, All Things Considered keeps you up to date on current events nationally and around the world. I inform you on what's happening at the state and local levels. Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered. Join me as we stay on top of the things that matter to you on All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 until 6 on AM 870 WKAR.
Squad.
Welcome back to Current Sports with me, Al Martin. All righty. You guys are probably wondering, am I listening to a rap station right now? Is this 96.5 on FM? No. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Jay Harris. That's right. I should call him Jay Dat Bull. That's Jay Dat Bull. That's his rap name. Now, for those of you who don't know who Jay Harris is, Jay Harris was actually the 2013 MSU football recruit. That's right. He just recently was stripped of his scholarship. Aaron, can we play that? We just listen to the lyrics. I want to listen to the lyrics of this thing. Play that one more time, Aaron.
This is what these bars meant.
All right, Philly.com reported yesterday that 2013 Michigan State recruit Jay Harris had opted for a rap career instead of football. But later on, the website changed its story, citing an unnamed source who said MSU coach Mark D'Antonio had stripped Harris of his scholarship, get this, after Harris posted a profanity-laden rap video on YouTube. And that's the video you just heard. Harris, a 5'11" wide receiver out of Downington East in Exton, Pennsylvania. He was a 3-star recruit, according to Rivals.com, and was ranked number 17 overall in Pennsylvania on ESPN's Recruiting Nation. You got to be kidding me. When I think of this, when I look at this story, it's kind of funny, but it's kind of sad at the same time, man, because this is a guy who we've heard a lot about. As I said, he's ranked number 17 overall in Pennsylvania's Recruiting Nation on ESPN, a guy with a lot of talent. And this is just the matter of really just carelessness. This guy, Jay Harris, who has he really wants to pursue his rapping career. And as you just heard, that's his first single called Dat Bull for Life. That's D-A-T-B-U-L-L for Life. And Mark D'Antonio, I guess, that just happened to be on his computer and ran across it, or is brought to his attention by someone. You know, and it's funny, man. I was talking to Matt Ludke, my production assistant, and we were talking, and he was like, you know, I would love to see Mark D'Antonio's face when he watched that music video. I mean, and if you look at the video, man, it's really Jay is just, he's smoking a blunt, and he's really just kind of acting real rowdy, man. Just like your typical, you know, rap video, man. It's really, really sad, you know, because, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, a lot of people were excited about to come to MSU, you know, to kind of strengthen that wide receiver core. And now this happens and boom, it's gone. It's really a lesson out there to all of you who are listening. It's so important to watch what you post on Facebook, on Twitter, on your vlog, on your blog. I mean, because people are watching, especially those who are in the public eye. I mean, I know I'm so mindful of what I tweet or what I put on my Facebook page, because I know people are watching, man, and you can't put certain things. And looking at this, just looking at some of the lyrics, man, and I ain't about that sober life. That's not something you want your future coach to be listening to. I'll keep going. All right. I rip these tracks up like a beast, and I have words like a poet. And he goes on to say, I'm like Van Gogh. Now, for those of you who are into poetry, I'm not, but everyone knows Van Gogh is a pretty popular a poet from back in the day. And it goes on, as you guys just heard this lyric, in God I trust, still every day I'm sinning. So, yeah, man, you got to watch what you post out there, guys. This is what this comes down to. Jay Harris, a guy who looked forward to coming to MSU. And, you know, they're telling me we have one more piece to play for you guys. Just play it. Go ahead, man.
Bilingual. Yeah, I speak that money pretty fluent. If you ain't talking money, then don't come talk to me. I'm sitting out these little rappers that success is what I
mean. Come on, man. Come on, Jay. All right, and I'm not trying to shoot down this dream. I mean, this guy may go on and be the next Kanye West. We don't know. I don't know. I'm not trying to shoot down the man's dream. At the same time, don't put that in the public eye, man. If you're doing it, cool. But keep it under wraps. Don't put it out there where people can see it, man. Well, obviously, it came to bite him in the butt. And now, you know, he gets his scholarship stripped. So, yeah, definitely had to share that for you guys, for those who didn't know. All right, let's move on. Andrew Wiggins, 6'7", the 6'7" small forward and top player in the senior class, has signed his national letter of intent. Who is he going to, you ask?
But in a couple of months, I'll be attending the school, the University of Kansas.
Yeah! I'll just follow my heart. My Kansas had my heart, so that's where I wanted to go.
They impressed you in what way?
Not only so much impressed, I just felt like that was the right place for me. And my brother is right there with me. I wish I would stay. That's maybe like an hour and a half, 2 hours away. So it's always close to my brother. I'm really excited. I've always liked Kansas. I always liked their style of play. I'm just looking forward to getting there and just doing my thing.
That's right, the Kansas Jayhawks. That's where Andrew Wiggins, the 6'7" small forward and top player in the senior class, has signed his national letter of intent to. He also considered Florida State, Kentucky, and North Carolina. Congrats to Kansas, who gets this unbelievable player. I mean, a lot of people, I've been reading up on this guy, a lot of people are talking about Andrew Wiggins as the best player to come out of high school since LeBron James. Now, we've heard this before in the past, but, I mean, there's a lot of legit guys talking that this guy is really the truth. Now, Wiggins, born in Canada, Toronto, actually grew up in Toronto. There's even more reports just saying that he's the best Canadian prospect since Steve Nash. He averaged 23.6 points, 11.7 rebounds, and 4.3 assists for Huntington Prep in West Virginia. That's last season. He actually moved to the States prior to this year. Like I said, he grew up in Toronto. He was also named the Naismith High School Player of the Year. Now, this guy is unbelievable, man. I want to give a rundown of, you know, the genes that he's coming from. His mother, Marita Payne Wiggins, competed for Canada in track and field and won 2 silver medals at the 1984 Olympic Games. Unbelievable. Now, look at his pops, Mitchell Wiggins. This guy played 6 years in the NBA after a crazy good career at Florida State. Now, his mom was also a star athlete at Florida State, and his older brother, Nick, plays guard at Wichita State. Unbelievable. It doesn't stop. His other brother, Mitchell Jr., plays at an NAIA school out in Southeastern University out in Florida. I mean, if I had those genes, I mean, I think I'd be the next LeBron James, too. He's unbelievable, man. This kid is something else. Now, they're saying that this guy, he has the ability to play multiple positions. He creates matchup problems all over the court. Very athletic, great length, plays with smoothness in his game, separates himself from, you know, from everyone he's playing with on the court. And with this recruit now, the Jayhawks, many feel that the Jayhawks have the number 2 recruiting class in all of the nation. Now if you look at Kansas, they're losing all 5 of their starters from last season, including Ben McLemore and Jeff Withey. Now with Wiggins, this is unbelievable, man. This definitely boosts their chances next season, and many have them right now going to the Final Four. Like I said, you never know how good these players will be. I think you know more so, though, when you look at recruiting, I think you know more so how good a player is going to be when it comes to the game of basketball as opposed to a sport like football. Just because basketball, I believe, is such a talent type of a sport. It takes a lot of finesse. And if this guy is really doing his thing at 6'8", has great ball handling skills, that is easy to transition to the college game. So I'm definitely looking forward to see him play. And like I said, Kansas, man, he's something else, man. But this is another aspect of this story. As all recruits go through this, once it was announced that Wiggins was going to Kansas, he received a ton of backlash on Twitter. People's telling them, you know, just really throwing his name in the dirt. I saw one tweet of someone even just saying, you know, go to hell. I mean, come on, guys. Like I said, this is also a kid. We have to realize that. All you listen out there who really criticize people, individuals like Andrew Wiggins, I mean, kids who are so talented and have all these schools coming at them, it's really tough, you know, for them to make a decision because they've never been in this type of decision before. And you're dealing with kids here. To really bash a kid like he's in the NBA already, and this kid hasn't played 1 game in college or the NBA yet, and bashing him for making a decision that he feels is best for him is totally ludicrous to me. And it really upsets me. This is the part of recruiting that I hate because it really upsets me that individuals go to this great a length. I mean, you're bashing a kid who hasn't played 1 game yet and call him out his name. Just really, that part of things really upset me. But I wish him all the best. Like I said, Andrew Wiggins, 6'7", small forward, top recruit in the nation. He goes to Kansas. All right, let's move on. Titus Young, guys, and this is a topic that we talked about on Monday just because it's really surreal. Titus Young, former wide receiver for the Detroit Lions, I'll kind of recount last week. The man was arrested 3 times in 1 week. The first 2 times he was arrested, it happened in the span of 1 day. Now, the third time he was arrested, happened last week on Friday. Attempted burglary was the charge. Titus tried to break in the top floor of a home. Titus gets inside the home. He approaches the door of the man who owns the home. The man is sitting there inside the room. He threatens Titus and says, "Hey, I'm about to go for my shotgun. It's under my bed." That startles Titus. I think that would startle anyone. he goes out the house and hides in the bushes of the man's backyard. Wow. Now, before this happened, this is the same day. Now, before this happened on Friday, it's really surreal because Titus and his dad were actually having some father and son time, just driving around, enjoying the day, riding around in Titus's Mustang. His dad was driving. Titus can't drive right now. But just having some father and son time, man. They went to go get some coffee. They come back home. Then Titus says, "Hey," he gets in the door. He says, "Hey, I forgot my phone. I left my cell phone in the car. Can I get the keys?" So he gets the keys and he goes to his car to get his cell phone. And then that's the last time his dad saw him. He drove off and didn't see him for the rest of the day. Really surreal stuff, guys. Now, like I said, Titus's young father, his father is coming out and saying that Titus Young has a mental disorder, citing this as the reason for Titus's behavior last week. Now, in an interview with the news, his father said that he couldn't name the disorder that his son suffers from, but Titus's father says that it is caused when the brain is compressed into the front of a person's skull. And he claims that his son started to change and he started to see signs of this change after a concussion suffered in 2011 while Titus was with the Detroit Lions. Now, something interesting to that aspect is that the Lions didn't even list Titus as list him on the injury report as suffering a concussion. So that's interesting. Now, in all honesty, if Titus is going through something, I really hope he finds help because we've seen this with players before in the NFL. They're really going through personality disorders. One of those prime examples being Brandon Marshall, the wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, who says he's tried to reach out to Titus when he started to see signs of what he was going through. So I really hope that Titus, if he is, something's wrong with him, they find some help because we don't want to see things like this and, you know, changes in personality. Because actually, you know, was friends with a guy who had bipolar disorder, and I really know how that can change an individual. So really, just really surreal, man, that this comes out of nowhere. So, all right. We move on to we also want to update you guys on the Diamond Classic. If you got a pen and a paper real quick, we just want to run down the Diamond Classic Prep Sports finalized appearance of the 52nd annual Dean Shipley Classic yesterday. On Monday, May 20th, this is all at Kircher Municipal Park. Okemos will play Hazard at 5:30. East Lansing will play Charlotte at 7:30. Then on Wednesday, same place, Kircher Municipal Park. Wednesday, May 22nd, DeWitt will play Portland, 5:30 p.m. Holt versus Bath at 7:30. I will be at all these. Should be very excited. I look forward to the Diamond Classic every year. Then Friday, May 24th, this is at Cooley Law School Stadium, the next round. Well, no, this is actually the same round. Grand Ledge will play Okemos or Hazlitt at 5:30. So, this is the next round. So, Grand Ledge will play Okemos or Hazlitt at 5:30 p.m. And Lansing Catholic will play the winner of Holt and Bath at 7:30 p.m. So, Grand Ledge and Lansing Catholic has a bye. Then Monday, the semifinals at Cooley Law School. Then Tuesday, June 4th at Cooley Law School, the final. That's on June 3rd and June 4th. All right. So I hope you guys get that down. I will be there for all of those games. Now let's move on. We want to let you know some sad news. Chuck Muncy dies. Chuck Muncy, a guy who had just one of the NFL's leading just running backs of the late 1970s. A guy who really battled some demons, man. Listen to this.
You know, at my lowest point when I was incarcerated in federal prison, I got busted, you know, distributing, you know, some cocaine and ended up doing 17 months in a federal jail after my football career. Had a great football career and then I'm in jail.
Yeah, Chuck, a guy who battled a cocaine addiction, his career was cut short by drug abuse, and he died Monday at his home in Paris, California. He was 60 years old, died of a heart attack. Really just battling with drugs, even tested positive, like I said, for cocaine during his career. And just listen to his accounts of back in the 80s.
And that's the way it was in the 80s, you know, especially in Southern California. You had the beach, you had San Diego, the most beautiful city in the world, beautiful women. Life was good, and life was a big party at the time. I mean, we were doing drugs the night before the game. Never did any for the game. You know, never got up and got high the morning of the game or anything like that. But night before, you know, stay up 2, 3 in the morning, you know, in your hotel room, watching TV and stuff.
Boy, that's something else. But Chuck ended up changing his life around, guys. He started up, started to change the lives of many kids through his foundation. And, you know, this is the clip I wanted to play you guys, because even though you may start off, you know, going through some things, Chuck was one of those guys that learned, and hey, I need to put that life aside. So listen to this.
And that's my mission now, to reach out a hand to people and say, hey, you know, come on, let's get up on your feet. You know, a lot of people get knocked down a lot, and not everyone knows how to get back up. And every once in a while, you got to help someone get back up.
Yes, Chuck, during his later career, he started to build his own foundation. He wanted to change the lives of kids who were going through struggles early in their life. He went to prison in 1989 in a drug case, and he tried to help. After he got out of there, that really changed his life, and tried to help disadvantaged children through that foundation I just mentioned. So, yes, he was unbelievable. His breakout season came in 1979. He ran for a Saints record of 1,198 yards. Really, really sad news. Rest in peace, Chuck Muncy. So, all right, just to give a quick rundown of the action that happened last night in the NBA, the Pacers take a 3-1 series lead over the Knicks last night. Really bad shooting for the Knicks. And then also, as I mentioned earlier with the Steve Smith interview, the Golden State Warriors fall to the Spurs. The Spurs now have that series lead. The Tigers topped the Astros last night. And, hey, tonight, folks, the Red Wings, that's right, 8 p.m. against the Blackhawks, game one. Looking forward to that one. All right, guys. Well, we now move on to our last segment of the show, where we hear from you. That's right. We want to take your calls. Give us a buzz at 517-355-9527. And let us hear your thoughts on any of today's topics. We want to talk about everything, guys. Even tweet me, Facebook me, guys. Give me a question. If something is on your mind, we will talk about it. And, of course, I'm not going anywhere, folks. I hope you don't either. Pick up the phone. More Current Sports is next.
When filmmaker and actor Sarah Polley was growing up, her family would joke,
"I didn't look much like my father. My dad probably wasn't my real dad."
Polly was 11 when her mother died with a secret. Years later, Polly went looking for the real story of her mother's life, and in the process discovered her father wasn't her father. On the next Fresh Air, Polly talks about her documentary, Stories We Tell. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am Al Martin. Well, it's now the time of the show. We want to hear from you. We want you to give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. If you got any questions, just want to rap about anything we talked about throughout this show, we want to hear from you. But in the meantime, guys, this kicks off the start of a new segment on Current Sports with me, Al Martin, where we go into debate. We're dubbing this Barbershop Wednesdays. Now, guys, the reason why I'm calling this Barbershop Wednesdays is because me, I'm born and raised in the city of Detroit. When I go and get a fresh cut for the weekend, all you hear as soon as you open the door is guys just debating about sports left and right. Everybody's a know-it-all when it comes to barbershop talk. So I brought in my production assistants, Matt Lutke and Ali Sharp, to talk about boxing. That's right. Today's topic and debate topic is boxing and sports and the popularity of boxing would ever reach the popularity where it once was back in the day. And this is kind of a preview for next week, because all of next week, guys, we are going to really dive in deep about this topic of where the future of boxing is headed and how is it diminished over time so much. So with this debate on Barbershop Wednesdays, you guys are going to be involved. That's right. You listening right now are going to be involved. I want you to tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or like us on Facebook, Current Sports with Al Martin, and we want you to decide the winner of this debate. Whoever had the best points, whoever, you know, really nailed it and you agree with them the most, we want you to vote, basically. If you think I won, say Al won. If you think Alex won, say Alex won. If you think Matt won, say Matt won. And we're going to keep tally throughout the show, and we're going to see who is really demolishing and really going away with this thing. I think I am. I'm so competitive.
I'm trying to go undefeated, man.
I don't like. I told you yesterday, I don't like when my grandmother's. If my grandmother's here playing goldfish with me, I'm not just trying to beat. I'm trying to kick your guys' butt, all right? So let's try this thing, man. All right. So boxing and its popularity right now as far as our medium goes. Who wants to go first?
Well, I think you're the guy to go first.
Okay.
Welcome back to current sports. Welcome back to boxing, possibly. What do you say?
I got it. All right. I'll start off. This is my view on it. Personally, for me, I don't think boxing is ever going to get back to where it was back in the day. And these are my reasons why.
Ever. You're saying ever?
Ever. I don't think. Right now, if we go at this pace we're going right now, boxing will never get back. And this is why. I think, first of all, there is a lack of charismatic and unified heavyweight champions. There's not a heavyweight champion that you can name off the top of your head who you can identify with the sport of boxing. And that really hurts you, because when you talk about boxing, you don't talk about the middleweight. Back in the day, you didn't talk about the middleweight or the lightweight champion. You talked about the creme de la creme of boxing, which is the heavyweight division. You don't have that right now. Here's my other point. When you talk about boxing today, guys, there's way too many belts. I think I have a belt on right now. I think this could be a boxing belt right now. I mean, this is ridiculous. There's way too many belts. Back in the day, you had your lightweight, middleweight, heavyweight. That's it. That is it. And I think that kept it more organized. People knew who the champion was. You didn't have this just construe going on like
welterweights.
Welterweights. It's crazy now, man. And then the division, the WBA, the WBC, the IBF, it's getting out of hand. I think that turns fans off because they don't know. They can't really solidify a clear cut black and white champion.
Right. Now there are definitely a lot of belts. But what I want to say, Alan, this is going to bring me to my next point, is maybe the sport is declining right now, like you said, and I'm not going to deny it. There is no predominant charismatic heavyweight. There is no unified selection in terms of who's the face of boxing right now. It's still up in the air. There's no Ali. There's no big fight. There's no classic fight that's happened in this last decade.
Right.
Now, why is that? Well, I think the reason is simply because they're still searching. The talent isn't there right now. You can make the debate that's because of concussions. You can say it's because there's no drug testing mandatory. You could say it for a bunch of reasons. But I think that it's not quite out yet. I think that the reason there are so many belts, and I don't think this is a bad thing, is because they want to find the talent. They're going to do whatever it takes, whether it's building up a welterweight, building up a lightweight, whoever it may be, whatever division they're at. I think the reason that there are so many belts right now is because they're still waiting for that classic fight. They're waiting for your heavyweight. So for that reason alone, I'm going to say, just for my first point, that they're not out. Now, what do you think about that?
We're going to hear from Matt and say, but I got to say, I think that when you talk about all those belts, I think money drives everything right now. That's all about money. When you talk about these sponsorships, who want to hop on the train.
Right. So money, fights.
And you didn't see that back in the day, though. Money was there, of course. You're a boxer, you're gonna get your check. But I feel like boxing back in the day was just about boxing, really. You know what I mean? It's about two guys going after each other. It wasn't all this politics that it is right now. But go ahead, man. I'm sorry, bro.
All right, and to answer Alex's point, or kind of just address it, you know, you said they're looking for that fight but I feel like for at least half a decade it was Pacquiao and Mayweather just dancing around each other, and they never fought. They had the fight. Those are, you know, the two fighters that would culturally move the needle more than anybody else. And, you know, all they did was verbally spar, but they didn't actually get in the ring, which is what everybody wanted. So it's like, even when they have the pieces in place, you know, for whatever reason, you know, if it's Don King or Bob Arum or all the higher-ups, you know, they're not, they don't, they're getting in their own way. It's like boxing itself is hindering boxing's success, because even when they have, you know, the things that are going to draw the viewers, draw the interest, they can't set it up and actually let it happen. They, you know, there's always something that's going to tweak it, or somebody's not going to be ready to fight, or somebody's not going to want to fight. And, you know, if you're looking to put these two star power, you know, these right. two guys with serious star power together, and you can't do it, you know, when is it ever going to
exactly.
happen?
Exactly. I totally agree. They were dancing around each other for just right. left and right. I mean, Mayweather talking about the drug testing.
Right.
And then
right.
the money's not right. I mean, come on. You didn't hear Ali arguing with Frazier.
Absolutely. The money's definitely there. But look at that. Yeah. One piss test determined whether they would fight.
Yeah, exactly. Very true. And that's a problem. I mean, back in the day, you didn't have guys like Matt said dancing around each other. They were just dancing around each other, still dancing around each other. And, you know, it's really, really hurting the game in its popularity right now. So, like Matt said, you had the fight. It just didn't happen. Now, another point I want to get at is that when you talk about the popularity of a sport, you have to have the youth involved in some ways, because you have to have, you know, kids that are willing to watch it, first of all, and willing to partake in it. And there is a tremendous lack of boxing inner city clubs for the youth to participate in. So they're not getting exposed to the sport. Now, back in the 70s, I mean, I was talking to my grandfather, you know, when he was alive, and my dad about this. I mean, you had a boxing club just about in every neighborhood you can imagine. And to be frank with you, back in Detroit, when my uncles were getting to it, they weren't putting time out in the corner. My uncle tells me all the time, they would say, hey, okay, you guys got a problem, go in the backyard, we got gloves for you, and go at it. You know, it's ingrained in the culture.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's not how it is nowadays. I mean, boxing is foreign. If I was to, you know, grab my 7-year-old cousin who's in love with LeBron James and Adrian Peterson and say, hey, name me one boxer, he'd probably say Mayweather. But other than that, I mean, he's lost. You know what I mean? So.
Sure. And another thing about that is that you have to look at what's going on at universities. Here at Michigan State, they have boxing classes. You had your guest this weekend, as we talked about before we went on here, Ali Easley is about to come on here, and he's working on some clubs too. So, but like you said, I mean, you growing up in Detroit, you know the influence of Kronk. That obviously has faded out quite a bit. What do you think the future is with Detroit boxing? Because you have Mayweather now, a guy from Grand Rapids, who has maybe trained in Detroit from time to time again, but you know, where has this Detroit staple gone?
Yeah, I really think it's now really, really hurt due to one thing, and that's the passing of Emmanuel Stewart, that you guys know. Emmanuel Stewart is the guy who really got Kronk started and really ingrained in the culture of boxing. Like I said, Kronk Gym is one of the most popular gyms in boxing history. And when he passed, I really couldn't even tell you who took over it. I know it still exists. I've heard ideas thrown around that it's being renovated and possibly moved somewhere else, but I like I said, I think the popularity of boxing right now, if something doesn't change where boxing gets on local television like it was back in the day, I mean, you had local television spots picking up the Ali fight or, you know, the Frazier fight or, you know, and so on and so on. If it does not get ingrained in a regular culture where you don't have to pay to watch it, then I don't see it going anywhere. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm going to talk about the elephant in the room, and that's, you know, UFC and MMA. And, you know, you can see that on, you know, FX. Like, it seems like every night of the week, and then you have to pay, you know, pay-per-view to watch a boxing fight. And it seems like as far as garnering interest for kids, I mean, even as far as just watching it on TV, it's a lot easier to find a UFC fight than it is a legitimate boxing match. And, you know, for the casual fan or someone who's not maybe a diehard boxing fan, you know, UFC is probably going to be more appealing to an average American, you know, consumer of sports, just because, you know, we are all about hyper-violence, and that's a sport that's about hyper-violence. You can see a fight that lasts 30 seconds instead of 12 rounds of Mayweather toying with Guerrero. You know, it's a different animal, and it seems like UFC is going to be the one that's going to catch a wider net of people than boxing. I mean, it's the sweet science. I think that implies that there's something more to it than just, you know, sheer brutality. And, you know, it's those nuances that really draw people in and make people love boxing. But that's not going to be the thing that, you know, people are drawn to immediately just being a casual fan or a kid watching boxing.
Right. So. And you have to look at the reason. Why is it on pay-per-view? They're probably not confident. If they did put it on regular cable, like you said, it wouldn't sell out. They have to make some revenue, and they need to charge the viewers, because if they put it on regular cable, they're not confident against other markets, against other shows, against other productions, that it's going to last. And then one more point I want to say before I hand it off to you is, look at the past, okay? We've seen – before Mike Tyson got his belt in 85, boxing, from my understanding, was a little bit of a decline too. You look at the death of Benny Parrott back in 1962 due to boxing – I mean, there was a decline from that, but look where boxing has come. It still came back, not in necessarily the same amount of viewership and the same amount of fire to come back, but it's still around. So I wouldn't say it's quite out yet. I just think that they're looking for that uniqueness. Sure, Floyd, like you said, you said it this week, he might be probably one of the top five defensive fighters.
Yeah, unbelievable.
The reason Floyd is such a great boxer is because he's so unique. You don't see many guys be as shifty as Floyd. And I think the fact that we haven't seen that many unique boxers to the viewer. I mean, you want to pay for someone that you want to watch that's unique. So right. I just think that they're not necessarily looking for the best boxer. They're looking for something unique that you don't see every day. And that's why they're making new belts, new different varieties of boxing, trying to spice it up. So, of course, they're trying. You might
Alex,
think that it won't
you
ever-
know, you come on, brother. You know that all of these belts, I mean, I lose track of how many belts there are because
it's
ridiculous. How does that – okay, you're telling me that all these belts are making it more competitive in a way?
Well, I don't think it's more competitive. I just think
– You think it'll make people want to watch?
No, well, of course. You're not going to watch a double A team opposed to an MLB team. You know, you're going to watch a heavyweight fight opposed to a welterweight fight.
Right.
But what I'm saying is the belts are boxing's attempt to find more talent and define more niches. UFC is a niche because you're not having a heavyweight fighter. You're having fighters that are more skilled with lower body, you know, different weight classes. You know, UFC fighters coming in a bunch of different shapes and sizes.
Well, I got to say, I just think having all these belts just make me one confused brother at the end of the day. I just miss it when people don't like – when you talk about sports, I mean, some sports are so complex already. I know, you know, when I I'm just bringing up my mom, for instance – When I'm sitting there watching a football game, there's so many rules to it. She doesn't know what's going on. Why is the ball being hiked? What is that yellow line on TV? It's so many. Sports are too complex, and that kind of turns people off. But football is so ingrained in our culture already that football is going nowhere. But when you talk about boxing, people like simplicity. You know, keep it simple, stupid. You know what I mean? Just keep it simple. We don't want to think about, okay, who's the WBC welterweight? Who's the WBC lightweight? We just want to say, who's the heavyweight? Who's the lightweight?
Right. But do you think the majority of people are trying to keep it simple? Probably.
But I
don't think the majority of people follow all of these different weight classes,
no,
like you're saying.
Not at all. And that's why the popularity of boxing is declining. Now, I have heard an initiative that CBS, I was reading this last month, they're trying to bring boxing to regular local television during the weekends. And I actually saw them do it. I believe this is back in December, around December-ish. And it was really cool because I'm a big fan of boxing. I wanted to get back to the level of popularity that it once was. And to see it on local TV, it was just amazing, man. And I definitely tuned in. I didn't even know who the two boxers that were fighting were. But I just wanted to see it and just watch it. You know what I mean? And that's something that I think will draw viewers in because sometimes you may just have local TV on. Guys that don't have cable watch local TV all the time. And boxing comes on, you might say, hey, this might be a good fight. Let me sit down and watch it. So, you know, there's many, many things that you can pick at here. And as Alex said earlier, that we're attacking this thing head on. Next week, we're going to have everything from referees of boxing, guys like Frank Garza, coming in, who's actually still refs boxing. We're gonna have trainers. Former trainer of actually got a boxer who went against Felix Trinidad back in the day. If that name rings a bell, we're gonna have a host of individuals who know what they're talking about. Guys, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say one more thing. One quick statistic. You look at it since 1960, the Olympics. The only gold medals that have been won since 1960 are four. It's before Foreman and Ali won in 1960, only four gold medals since. What does that have to say?
My final thought is, you know, there's a reason that Mike Tyson is still the most, you know, recently famous heavyweight boxer, and that's because there's no one to replace him. The Klitschko brothers are boring.
Oh, very.
Come on, Lennox Lewis.
Yeah. Oh, man, that brother. Well, Hopkins is old now. He's done. But all right, guys, we want to thank you all
for tuning in. Before we leave, give a special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharp, Matt Lutke in here, along with my engineer Aaron Young, Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKAR. Tomorrow, we'll chat with Detroit Pistons television analyst Greg Kelser, also a Spartan great. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing.